You know, if you're the person that cries when you lose, as a child or as an adult, I think that's a good thing. I think it's good if you care that much.
Welcome to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast, where we explore what it really takes to sell, lead, and grow a business, and ultimately, live well. In every episode, we go beyond tactics to discover how entrepreneurs and leaders across different sectors are growing with love, impact, and integrity. Welcome back, everybody, to the Jason Mark Campbell Podcast. I'm so excited about the conversation we're going to have today because it's with an individual that I've seen grow, transform, and now lead massive innovation when it comes to the field of strategy, integration of AI, and has worked in running some large organizations, big teams. And I'm so excited that you're going to be able to witness the journey, see the work that's in play on how it's going to be able to impact you on how you grow your business, how you grow yourself, the values to take on, and what are the challenges that will come up along the process. Skip Kelly is the kind of leader who makes you wonder, is he living secretly nine lives? He's a serial creative as well as a business strategist. He's worn more hat than a Broadway consumer designer. He's the host of the Skip Kelly Show. He has been on the top 100 global most loved CEOs in 2024, has just released his first debut album, First Light, and he is now working as a brand strategist for the next generation of work. He's also been one of the people behind Amiara AI, which is a tool that we're going to talk a lot more about in this conversation to see how AI can support you in leading, building strategy, growing revenue, value, and more. Skip, welcome.
Your voice is so silky smooth on that microphone. I feel like I'm listening to like a late night jazz radio station.
I mean, that's what we're going for. That's why we go with the Rode mics, right? Because I see you're equipped with a very similar setup. And you know, one of the things I didn't add into the intro is we've known each other for over a decade, and I wanted to go down that path. When was the first time you came to a Mindvalley event? Because that's where we connected. Do you remember what that first interaction was?
I do remember the first event ever. My brother was the one who brought it up to me because I had listened to an episode of Bulletproof Radio back when Bulletproof was very, very new. I was one of the first Bulletproof ambassadors, and he interviewed this guy who I didn't know. And it was about a book called Code of the Extraordinary Mind. And as I was listening to the interview, I was like, wow, these are a lot of the things that I talk with clients about and businesses about. I want to read this book. And I got the book and I finished it in a day, like canceled stuff, didn't put it down and went, I definitely need to get involved with this guy's work. And a few months later, he did a summit in San Diego called the Extraordinary Summit, I believe. And it was like 200 people, not big. And I went to the summit and I remember that Vision was guiding the entire second day. They were clearly like flying by the seat of their pants at this event, thinking back to it, like probably had no real idea of what they were going to do that day. And Vision spent the entire second day guiding us through the six-phase meditation, one phase at a time for an hour or so at a time. So he would explain like what this phase was all about and he would do it. And he added a seventh phase at this experience. And I don't remember, it was like phasing or something where essentially like you fuse with an alternate reality version of yourself, something like that. And when he did it afterwards, he asked the audience and he said, hey, like, what did everyone see if anyone saw anything? And at this point, I was a Western medicine trained physical therapist, essentially. And I was not into this world. It was the first time I'd ever meditated, was at this event. And I raised my hand and a bunch of people around me. And I said, yeah, I don't know. I was holding a camera and I was filming you, Vision. And the audience burst out laughing. And they were like, yeah, right. And Vision was like, oh, that's cute. Cool. Moving on. And I just sat down embarrassed. And he went to the next person who said they had some sort of a vision during the exercise. Obviously, that came true pretty intensely for quite some time. So props to Vision for guiding the meditation and props to all those people giggling. But I believe we met at that event.
Well, I remember the most when you came, and I believe it was in the Barcelona event that was in 2017, you were the man with the camera. You just took what was a vision and then you showed up in a way that I've never seen anybody show up with an intensity that just got everybody's attention. Like you came to that event and you were like, okay, I'm just a participant, but I can choose to be more. And that mindset that you had was so extraordinary because you're like, I'm going to document my journey. I'm going to film. I'm going to publish these videos. I'm going to be there to show up at 150%. And to me, that was the most incredible mindset I've ever seen of an individual who had a mission, was bold. And like, I want you to walk us through, how did you come to this mindset showing up? Like, was there an intention that came from that vision? Because most people just chill. You are anything but chill.
Yeah. So this is another funny story. And I would preface this by saying, at least in my experience of meeting a lot of really successful, awesome, amazing, inspiring people, big energy is kind of the secret to life. And so finding where your big energy lies and seeing how you can activate it, let it out, find places that pull it out of you, people that pull it out of you. And there's kind of an internal component and an external component. The environment that you're in, the people you're surrounded by, your circumstances are the external component. And then the internal is like how you talk to yourself and how you think about it. And I think if you can become a master of internally pulling big energy out of yourself in any situation, you're going to get pretty much anything you want in life. Or it might take longer than you want, but you'll get there. So having that internal dialogue and a really good internal environment is super important. That being said, I got to Barcelona. It was my first time ever leaving the country. I had gotten my passport for this trip. I showed up the first day. I get into my Airbnb and it is janky and crazy. And I had no idea that Airbnb would give you a shared space. I thought all Airbnbs at the time, bear in mind, I lived in Orange County, California. I had a bougie apartment. I worked with billionaires as my clients every single day. And then I get to Barcelona and my Airbnb is really nasty and bad. And I'm literally in a hallway room with no windows, with no AC, and it's baking hot in the summer. So I'm like sleeping on top of the sheets and everything. And there's like people walking by. So the first day I started researching tickets to go home. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to go to this event. There's no way. I've never been out of the country before. I'm scared. I'm nervous. I have an amazing life back home. Why would I come to this Mindvalley event and live like this for a month? Like I have to get a different Airbnb or hotel and everything is booked at this point. You know, it's like beautiful time in Barcelona. So that's the context of how I actually showed up, which most people don't know. But I was really good at the internal state. So I went around the city and I just filmed. And I always loved making films. I always loved like capturing environments. And to cheer myself up, I made a video about the experience of going to Barcelona. And I posted that video really a lot for myself and also to share to my friends back home, like what I was doing, where I was going, why I was doing it. And that video went viral. I had no desire for that. That wasn't the goal. I'd only been making videos for a little bit at that point. But I was making a really big life transition with that trip and kind of trying to find a new version of myself. And I guess that related with a lot of people. A lot of people kind of saw some piece of themselves in that video. And once I saw that other people liked it and it inspired them, I went, I'll make a million of these. This is great. I love doing this. So yeah, sure. And so that's how the videos actually came to be. And I guess I just, back home, because I was really well known for this physical healing technique, I didn't want to tell anybody that that's what I did. I didn't want to like have a line out the door of people who had some sort of injury that they wanted help with. And then I had helped start this big supplement company that was becoming quite well known. It was in like Tim Ferriss's latest book that had just come out. So if I told people about that, I think it would have like carried a certain reputation into it. So I told everybody that I was a vlogger and that was like kind of true, but not really what I did for a living. But I just wanted to be low key. I just loved it too. So I just wanted to show up with like big energy and have a month of fun. And that month of fun became completely life-changing.
Wow. Yeah, I did not know that side of the story. And it's so fascinating to see how you approach the situation. Like you still had the fears, the doubt. You almost made the decision to leave. And even if you look back at that event where you shared that you were going to film Vision, which for everybody to know, like Skip became one of the main filmmaker vloggers, following Vision around, creating a ton of content, and created some of the best productions and videos that connected with the audiences at Mindvalley. And then, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened since then. But most people at that event, when they would have stood up, people would have laughed at what you shared, would have put that in a little box, forgot about it, and never opened it again as just this, you know what, that was stupid. Maybe instead I should just not open my mouth and raise my hand when people ask a question. And you kind of like box yourself in and you use this, it's an event that has constricted your manifesting or your possibilities. You flip that in a very different way. What do you think was in place that made it so that you've kind of seen that as a point of expansion and from a mindset perspective?
It's probably, like all these other questions, going to be less evolved than you might imagine. Here's a funny answer to that. I've noticed a couple things about, you know, people that tend to do well in challenging circumstances in life. One of them is they have a chip on their shoulder. They have something to prove. I definitely have that. Like, there's aspects of me that really want to like show people what's possible, and not always from a good place. Like, sometimes it's from a place of like spite or like proof or challenge where I'm like, oh, okay, you don't think so? We'll see. You know, maybe I'll fail, but maybe I won't. That's one part of it. The other part of it is, you know, who am I to say, you know, what's possible and not possible? And so when I have big hopes, I'm like, interesting, maybe, or dreams. And if I have like big fears or I'm scared of failing, I'm like, maybe. And I guess I'm just open to it because I've failed a lot and it's turned out okay. And I've succeeded a lot and it turned out not great. So I'm not really sure, you know, because life is just this like snaky wave that just constantly moves. So that's one piece of it. I think the other thing is I just trust the universe, or I trust life itself, that it's going to be great and it's going to be awesome and it's going to have a happy ending on a regular basis because of that snaking. So I'm just always looking up for when things are going to get better.
You know, this is one of the things I like about this conversation so far, is for everybody who's tuning in or trying to understand these, like, oh, what's the big secret? Because like, you went off and you've led a major organization in personal growth, and now you're working with this AI strategy app, which seems that with the conversation so far, that comes from a left field. And even I was surprised when I was like, wow, there's a lot more to skip that I need to unpack here. And there's no magic sauce. There's a lot of basic things that are in place and things that you've been persistent with. And I'm glad you opened up about having that chip on your shoulder. Like, even like, I need to prove it wrong. Like, one of the things, I don't think I've ever shared this, but you know, when I was young, like, my dad was a successful small business owner in a small village in Canada. And one of the things that I would always hear from my peers or my cousins when I was really young was like, oh, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, your parents are well off. So like, you know, it won't matter what you do. You're going to be taken care of. And that's been kind of my dark energy, you could say, that has made it so that, oh yeah, we'll see. I'll need to do something bigger. And I won't ask for any of my family's help to do it, has been one of the key catalysts as to why I overwork. I want to prove, I want to stand on my own feet. And so it's so interesting that sometimes what's labeled as something that's like, oh, that comes from a trauma, that comes from a dark energy, has still been the fuel that created a lot of goodness in the world. Do you revisit this chip in your shoulder? Do you use it? Or do you think that there's something you need to transcend from it?
I would say I use it. You know, there's this fantastic, let's call it a cliche, which is, you know, if you're the person that cries when you lose as a child or as an adult, I think that's a good thing. I think it's good if you care that much. And so, you know, when you see like kids pouting or younger business people pouting because of a loss, I'm like, yeah, hurts. Good. That's a very good thing that you're attached to success. Now, don't let it define you. Just because you lost once, twice, 27 times doesn't mean you won't win the next time. You know, it's one of my favorite things about recreational sports, especially as an adult, especially the older you get, because I feel like sometimes the older you get, some losses get easier. Like, let's say heartbreak. You know, if you've had 5 or 6 heartbreaks, like we were chatting a little bit before, they don't necessarily get less painful, but you get more used to it, I guess, where you're like, yeah, this is that thing that sucks. And I think being able to play like recreational sports, like I just came from a pickleball club right before this. And when you lose, you're like, cool, I'm going to play like 700 more games and I'm going to win one, you know, and I'm just going to keep going. And I like to think about life that way. So just remind yourself like, I don't like that I lost and there's another game.
I want to switch gears and kind of fast forward because, well, you were named one of the most loved CEOs back in 2024. You worked with Marissa Peer, RTT, and took on the leadership of this organization. I'd love to walk back, even for my own curiosity, because you've stepped into business leadership. And I wanted to understand, how did you first dip your toes into that? Was that also part of your secret identity? Because you kind of jump into that and just took the bull by the horns.
Yeah, it was a secret identity for sure. So the context there would be 2008, I worked for a youth leadership and motivational speaker as his right-hand man, like his only team member. And I helped sell, promote, speak on stage, organize things. I was 18 years old. So very, very young. A year and a half later, he offered to kind of put me on the spot and create my own brand and start selling me as well as an additional speaker. Because he was like 33, 34. So he wanted like a teenager that could speak to these youth in a different way. And I ghosted him. I didn't feel worthy at all. I came from a very poor upbringing. I had a lot of self-worth issues. I mean, I still do. But all that being said, I ghosted him and said, I want to prove that I deserve what he was trying to offer me someday. And so I said to myself, for 10 years, I'm going to go crush. And I'm going to go get really good at some things. And I'm going to develop some fantastic stories that make me like worthy of being listened to, because these kids like idolized me at these camps, which was amazing. And I loved helping them and encouraging them. And these were usually like underprivileged youth. Some of them had killed people. Like these were gang members. It was amazing the work that we were doing. I just didn't feel like I deserved to be the guy that was speaking to them. Looking back on it now, I absolutely could have owned that and it would have been perfectly okay and amazing to be similar to their age and do that. But I went into 100% commission sales because that's what Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar, Tony Robbins, everybody said you needed to do. And so I was like, cool, let's do it. And for the first 6 months, I was awful. I couldn't sell anything. I felt so bad trying to get money from people. And it just was this really weird energy for me coming from this poor upbringing to ask someone for $1,000. You know, I had never had $1,000 to my name. And after 7 months or so, I got really good at that. And then I got really good at selling and I got really good at communicating value. And 7 years after that, I started my first company with some friends and I went off on my own. So I technically started two companies at the same time and both of them did really well. And this is where things got crazy because I used to work with some professional athletes, but I'm not a particularly large human being. And when you look at like pro NFL players, I'm like 160 pounds or something like 65 kilos. And these guys are 300 pounds and they're like 120, 130 kilos. They're literally double my size. And so my body really couldn't handle this like physical therapy working with them. So I kind of pivoted and started exclusively working with CEOs and business people. And I got passed around these groups of millionaires and billionaires in Southern California. And I loved spending time with them. They drove everyone else insane because, as you might imagine, they canceled, rescheduled, were late, sent replacement family members for their sessions, didn't do any homework, didn't eat the way I told them to, did none of the things. And I loved them. I loved their chaos. I thought it was fascinating. And there were certain ones I'd spend 2 or 3 hours with at a time. We'd be having coffee, talking about business. They'd be walking me through all their decisions. I would go to board meetings with these people. I knew everything about all of their businesses. I just would not stop asking questions. I found it fascinating. And so I got to give them a lot of credit because at the same time, I was growing my two businesses and one of them went explosive nuclear growth. It was incredible. And that gave me the income and kind of the peace of mind to go to Barcelona and then to travel the world for 3 years making films and doing all sorts of stuff. And I just kept the business on the down low. And then in 2020, when COVID hit, kind of another really long story that I'll speed through, but I traveled to all the national parks and I did more and more business stuff, some day trading on the stock market, learned a lot of good stuff about big, big, big businesses. And then after that, I went through a dark night of the soul, started hosting events, ended up hosting an all-day festival with like a VIP day the day before with hundreds of attendees, sponsors. It was totally incredible. And then after that, decided I sucked at business and I wanted to get better. And the only way to get better would be to put my nose to the grindstone. And so I started looking for opportunities. And in that phase, I was helping people like Ajit and Mind Valley and some other people. And I bumped into John and Marissa, found out that they needed some help, stepped in, started helping, had massive success, 20,000% increase in engagement on Instagram in 2 weeks, got several 500,000 plus YouTube videos produced really easily. And then before I knew it, I was CEO of the company and started just exploding different products and services. And then for 18 months, continued to CEO it, got kicked in the face a lot, learned a lot of amazing things, launched a business accelerator for their graduates, did a beta program after everything I had learned, and then launched it fully, did, I'm not sure if I should say this, but like $500,000 in a week of sales, launching that program for the first time with a team of two. So pretty wild. And then ended up having to mass hire several other coaches and other people to come in and help. They all now run the program as I stepped away to go and build kind of the AI platform that would destroy accelerators and business things like that in the future.
You had a chapter, learning sales. How important was that sales training to all the successes you have today?
I think it's the most important skill set you can gain if you ever want to be an entrepreneur.
Clip, clip, clip. Why is that?
If you understand why people buy things and you can do that at least one-on-one, you can start to figure out how to do it 1-to-3, 1-to-10, 1-to-many. And then you can learn how to do it on a landing page, via emails, via posts on different platforms. And that's really why I was able to do social so well, is understanding the psychology of why people buy or do not buy things, and how to listen to cues to make it better. And oftentimes, you know, the best products in the world have the absolute worst sales and marketing, because they don't need to have good sales and marketing because their product is so good. But if they did have good sales and marketing, they could be totally amazing. And so I've always looked at it as like, I'm trying to even out the playing field, because then bad products need really good sales and marketing. And so that's a problem. We want to try to help the guys and the women and the people with the, you know, best products in the world.
I don't know if you know this, Skip, but my whole like motivator impact statement about my whole concept around selling with love is that there's so many douchebag salespeople and marketers that are basically overcharging for shitty products, which is taking advantage of people, because you understand the power that sales and marketing can have on people. And my whole mission, the reason I wrote the book, the reason I have these conversations, is so that the good people who are just trying to build great products, great services, can learn the skill, so there is no marketplace for the shitty ones. And so it's one of the reasons I was so excited. You are someone that I feel has taken a couple steps ahead of me in the way that you've done things, the products that you're working on. So I'm very inspired and looking at the journey. And it's really amazing to see what you're working towards. And it sounds like the latest thing you've kind of put a grasp around is this whole AI bubble that has popped up, but you're looking at ways that can really bring value for leadership, for strategy. Would I be as bold as to say that you're using these tools, and you've been able to use these tools in your role as well, and you're building a system to help a lot of other people in leadership positions?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because you're a salesperson and maybe the people listening are into sales, they'll really get what I'm going to say here. What I noticed running companies over the years, and especially with RTT and the accelerator, because I was teaching, you know, over 100 people how to build their businesses in that process, there is a huge difference between needing to convince someone to buy something and someone already wanting to buy something. So the classic story at business school is, what's the best business you can build? And it's a hot dog stand outside of a stadium of hungry people. And so the question becomes, how can you build something amazing and then place the awareness in front of a crowd of starving people that want your product? And there's a few things to kind of break down there, maybe just two that we'll start with. Number one is, build something that people really want, not something that you just want to build. And so there's a harmony here of like doing incredible work and making sure people already want to buy it. A perfect example of this would be like toilet paper or bidets, depending on your vibe. And so it's like people want that stuff. They're looking for it. They need to have it. Toothbrushes, people are using it every day. There's lots of people buying it all the time. It's a really big market. The total addressable market is the entire planet. Amazing. Internet, social media, these are huge markets. And so the question becomes, where is a starving market that you are passionate about serving and you feel like you can do it at a world-class level? Now, not everyone has to be world-class, and that's okay. The second piece of it is, how do you communicate it in such a way that they love it? And so my number one thing here, like if I got hit by a bus tomorrow and anyone learned anything, it's like, learn to sell the thing before you build the thing. Because in the process of learning how to sell it, where someone will actually give you money, then you can say, oh, just kidding. I actually can't sell you that yet. But you wanted to get to the point where they would buy it. And then you make sure a lot of people would buy it. And then you build it to spec of what they're asking for exactly. And so when I built the accelerator, the way I implemented this, I call this the lightning strike strategy, by the way. I got 100 people in a room and I pitched them the idea of making their business successful with a Google Doc, with a bunch of just titles of what a day would be. I literally built it in 8 minutes with like ChatGPT. And then I just edited some of the titles. And I was like, are people going to be excited about this? And which pieces are they going to be excited about? And then as I pitched it, I watched really closely in the chat. I had a few people come up and ask questions. And I just noticed everything they were saying and asking and made sure that went into the program. And then as we did this 4-month beta version of the program at a much lower cost, I just noticed what really helped them, what didn't, and what were new things coming on board that I thought could really accelerate them. And then I took all the best stuff, put it into a product, and then sold that product. 4 months of testing, lots of social proof, and then, yeah, it did really, really well, but it wasn't by accident. So I was just selling it a lot and then building it with customers, and then, of course, it did well.
You know, an industry that I always love looking at how they do things to get inspired on these strategies is the video game industry, because they have such large budgets, they need to do things in a way that maximizes shareholder value, and they've studied so much on the psychology. And what I see are these types of strategies being used on a large scale, like giving early access, alpha, beta, and there's monetization across the board. There's user feedback. Some of them use it in a very greedy way. Some people use it in a fantastic way so that by the time you release the product, you have something quite polished. If you're going to be getting people to buy a product before it's built, or at least using this lightning in a bottle strategy, can you share a couple do's and don'ts so that it doesn't become something that takes advantage of customers?
Absolutely. So I'll start with a don't that goes into a do, because they're all mirrors. Yeah. Don't talk to people who are not interested in the product. So if your mom wouldn't buy it, don't ask for her opinion and don't listen to it if she gives it. And, you know, that's a tough one sometimes. Like, to be honest, I'll listen to people and then it's just one ear out the other. I'll validate as they're talking, but I'm never going to take their feedback. The only people you do listen to are ideal buyers. So, for instance, if I was trying to sell a sales course, I'm not going to listen to Jason's advice because he's not going to buy that course. He's a master. So I'm going to talk to someone who does need the course about what they want. Jason's going to develop maybe a mastermind for sales or a business accelerator or something like that. So talk to people that actually are buyers when you're trying to get feedback on things. Even talking to other people who are experienced in business, they have their own perspective and lenses. It's not always helpful to talk to people that are really experienced unless they have experience in your market. And so sometimes it's okay to kind of like soundboard with people who have experience in other markets. But if you can find someone who's done something very similar to what you're trying to do, that is really valuable. So don't listen to mentors who are jaded, who are pessimistic, and especially who don't have any sort of experience in the industries that you're in. You can listen to them for like psychology tips if they're positive and optimistic potentially, but not tactics and strategies. Another big thing I would say is do listen to people who are very AI forward right now, because if they're not, it's kind of like being in the year 2000 and not being pro internet. It's probably just radically going to evolve. The psychology, the principles behind business are the same, but the actual tactics and the strategies are going to shift quite dramatically. And so to your earlier question, Amiara is really about helping everyone get lightning in a bottle. It's like the sales rep, the classic story. Do I have to spend like 2 calls and 3 hours convincing this person to buy something? Or do I get on the call and it's really just taking a payment? And so the goal is, how do I create a product and an experience where it's just taking a payment?
I love that. I would love to actually ask you, when you step into a field of leadership and you were running an organization, what were the things that you were doing as a CEO of an organization that you were surprised of taking a lot of your time doing? And what are some of the things you had to stop doing that were you're just so used to doing from before?
The things that I was surprised to be doing a lot of is customer service, phone calls, complaints, things that get escalated. At any given time, we had 2,000 high-ticket buyers that were actively in a program. We maybe had 4 or 5 really serious issues come up per week. These are like catastrophic life events. Someone gets cancer, somebody dies. I mean, like really wild stuff. So when you think about that, it's like, oh, wow, of 2,000 people every week, 5 of them are going to go through a catastrophic life event of some kind. Occasionally there was a quiet week, but a lot of energy and time spent dealing with those types of things. Things that I had to stop doing are a lot of things, honestly. You know, prioritizing and focus is such a big part of being a leader in general, especially being a CEO. And kind of the more team members you have, the more you need to spend time training, teaching. You know, I call it the 5 stages of leadership. And we all have all 5 simultaneously, but you kind of move through those 5. Stage 1 is inventor. So when you're first becoming a leader, it's usually because you're brilliant at something. You're like so good at something that makes you exceptional, that allows you to really step into leadership. But the inventor has its faults. You are brilliant, but no one else can do what you do because you literally invented it. And so inventors quickly transition into what I call commanders. And commanders bark orders at everyone. They tell you exactly what to do. They micromanage because they're brilliant. They're geniuses. And eventually commanders realize that this is not really going to work long term. And they start to realize they need to coach people. They're still going to give them some to-dos and some orders, but they're going to start to try to pull out some of the better things from their people. And then eventually they start to notice the team dynamics. Like let's say Jason works with Zoe and Zoe works with Jeff. And Jeff picks on Zoe. And Jason's trying to pump her up, but Jeff is being mean all the time. And you see coaches start to turn into protectors. They start to provide a better culture where people guard each other, protect each other, take care of each other, are optimistic. This is where you really set like company values and you try to create an environment where people can thrive. And eventually you realize that, oh, I need to help other people become inventors, help other people unleash genius. Then I need to place certain people in a commander role occasionally. It's not always peacetime. Sometimes it's wartime and someone's got to call the shots, but it can't be me because if it's me, it's a bottleneck. And then I need to teach my people how to coach each other. I need to teach my people how to protect the environment and the people around them. And eventually I step into what's called mentorship, where I'm not really telling you what to do. I'm not even necessarily just asking you questions. I am putting people in a room together, knowing that some good is going to come out of it. I'm really trying to do the least amount of words spoken and time with someone for the most amount of value and growth in them so that I can actually work with 160 team members simultaneously.
Thank you for walking us through that model. That's actually the first time I've heard of this model, and I can already see how practical it is. And my first thoughts when I hear that is like, yeah, you probably have to jump into a lot of these different roles at different times based on the state of the organization. But I would imagine after certain growth stages, you can evolve more and more. Is that typically how it works with the number of people you find yourself in the higher levels of the model?
Yeah, and everyone can step into all 5. I do think that there are skills to train, kind of like going to the gym. Sometimes you forget, or you'll find yourself in that commander role telling everyone exactly what to do, and you're wondering why you're burning out and why no one can get it right, and you're rushing, you know? And sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes you need to step into that commander role and literally tell everyone exactly what to do and look over their shoulder in an emergency situation. Sometimes you have to step in and be the inventor. Something's not working. A product's not working anymore. A sales process stopped working. No one's picking up the phone, whatever it is. And you're like, okay, we got to recreate it. And you got to pull that inventor hat from wherever it was in the past and bring it into the present. So yeah, you can definitely step into all 5. And, you know, I tend to notice that everyone has strengths. So like I am particularly good at inventing, and I'm particularly good at protecting. Those are my big strengths.
Trying to think of my own biases. I think I'm good at commanding. When I come in, it's usually to solve a problem, right? So if an organization brings me in as a consultant, a management consultant, then I come in, I'm like, okay, I can quickly see what the problems are. And then I'll be like, okay, you need to be doing this, you do that, you focus on this alike. And then once I see the fires have been tamed, I understand that a need of evolving has to happen. And then my biggest thing I have to struggle is like, I do like getting my hands dirty. I love going into like doing things like, yeah, I can do this funnel. I can do this landing page. And then I get excited and I go like, wait. When I do it, I always been the thought that like, yeah, when I do it myself, it's going to be best. But if I delegate it, it'll be like 80%, but I get to scale. And I get to a point where I'm like, wait, no, when I do it, it's 80%. And when I let the teams that do it, it might take a bit more time, but they do it 100%. And then I have to manage my own patience. Skip, I'm very excited about the next chapter. Now, tell us more about the project you're working on now, because it sounds like you're really going to be able to help people that are in leadership position, management positions, get clarity in a world that there's so much information and overwhelm. And I'd love to give you the opportunity to just tell us about the current project and how people can get involved.
Yeah, so Amiara AI, funny story. I actually was thinking last year, and I'm sure like everybody else, in October or so, I launched that accelerator. We were using AI for pretty much everything. And I just started to see like how much it was capable of with the right prompting, with the right systems, and with some creativity, with a lot of like human ingenuity added into it. And each person had their own secret sauce. And you know, I was teaching lots of people how to use it. But March this year, have you ever used Manus, M-A-N-U-S?
No, I'm a Grok user and ChatGPT user right now.
So Manus is this general AI agent. And it was the first time when I used to create, let's say, funnels in RTT in the business, there'd be, you know, the opt-in page, there's the actual page where they get the delivery of a thing, then there's like a nurture sequence that goes to a thicker page, maybe it has a VSL on it, and then if they opt into the VSL, they go to like an application, they put in some questions and they go to like a book a call page. If they book a call, they get a certain stream of emails. If they don't book a call, they get a stream of emails saying to book a call, so on and so forth. There's a whole sequence to it. And so I used to create these Google Docs with a bunch of tabs that would have each piece of that whole thing in it. And in March of this year, I got invited to do this Manus beta. They were doing a classic, you know, lightning in a bottle strategy. And it takes ChatGPT and just makes it look silly. And it was the first time I gave this agent one of my documents, and then I gave it a big document of just my random thoughts on a new product. And I said, can you make a Google Doc with all these tabs like I have here, but for this new product, and do it in like my tone of voice like this other one has? And 30 minutes later, I came back and it was done, and it was 90% how I would have done it. And then I couldn't sleep for a week because I went, okay, the world is about to change in a very serious way, because LLMs and ChatGPT and Claude, that was cute, somewhat helpful. This just took what a team would have taken 2 weeks to do and did it in 30 minutes. And it came directly from me. So there wasn't all this like back and forth, oh, you didn't understand, or I had to wireframe it. I was able to literally say, here's my process, here's my thoughts, and it just went and did it directly from the source. And I went, cool, everything is screwed, and I need to figure out how to help other people, because I think, I don't know, 3 or 4 billion people might be out of work in the next 10 years because of this. And a lot of them are going to want to start businesses and create financial wealth and prosperity and niche products that are going to be super useful. And so I asked myself, what could I create to help all of those people create prosperity, abundance for themselves and their families, and really bring a lot more wealth to just everyday people like me? Like, I grew up in the slums of Houston, you know, and grew up where $1,000 was an insane amount of money. And that's why I created Amiara. So right now, when you go to the site, if you have a business idea, you put it in and it gives you an estimated 5-year valuation and kind of like a how hot the idea score is. And then I get a bunch of information that I can use to help people build those businesses. And we are creating just a suite of these AI roles that can not just think for you, but do for you. So remember I said like writing those docs? Now it's even better. They don't just write the docs. They write the emails and they send the emails. They take care of so many of these things for you. But the ultimate part of Amiara and why I'm so proud of it is we build the best business context of anybody by a long shot. If you've ever heard of the consulting firm McKinsey, legendary for like $5 million starting point to do a business analysis for a Fortune 500, we do effectively the same thing of a McKinsey, but we do it in 40 minutes instead of $5 million in 6 months. And so that's what AI is capable of. I do have like a team of engineers and a phenomenal co-founder who's done 5 other tech startups. And his last one was AI tech and healthcare for the last 10 years. But it's a joy. It's super awesome. And I'm so excited to help a ton of people make really great businesses.
Well, we started with the mindset at the beginning and we ended into some exciting projects that you're working on now. Skip, it sounds like you're still quite early in your journey and there's some incredible things that you're working on now and that we're going to get to see you work on in the future. After this conversation, we're definitely going to be having more conversations about this platform. We're going to put a link for everybody who might be curious to go see what this tool is. And I'll give you an invitation to go connect with Skip, subscribe to his YouTube, check out his show. There's so many great guests that he brings onto the platform, some of them that have also been on this show. And he brings a unique perspective. And as much as he's doing all these incredible things, I love the calm energy that you bring into the conversation and the work that you're doing. So Skip, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show, for your time, for what you're creating into the world. We need more Skips, and I'm glad to be a part of the ecosystem that's going to take some of your ideas, bring them forward as well. It's been an absolute joy.
Thank you so much, Jason, and thanks for doing shows like this and sharing things with people, and I hope this was inspirational. Maybe people learned something, and if not, I'll do better next time.
Well, you just committed to a next time, and I feel our conversation's cut short, so we make sure to schedule that and do a follow-up on what's happening on the projects. Take care, Skip.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast. And of course, keep selling with love.
In cybersecurity, speed isn't just an advantage, it's survival. SOC Radar is your early warning system against hackers. SOC Radar continuously monitors the external threat landscape, so cyber threats hit your radar before they hit your business. But it doesn't stop there. SOC Radar empowers your company with proactive exposure management, actionable insights that help you stay ahead of cyber criminals and minimize business impact. And with SOC Radar's holistic exposure management, you get complete visibility, attack surface monitoring, dark web monitoring, threat intelligence, and brand protection are all unified in one powerful platform. SOC Radar isn't just another tool. It's your frontline defense in a world where threats never sleep. Get started with SOC Radar today. Right now, you can get a free dark web scan by going to socradar.io/podcast. That's socradar.io/podcast. Don't wait.